friends, I received this past week a letter from a dentist in Norristown, Pennsylvania, who has installed on the ceiling a television set for his customers. When he takes care of uppers, it comes in very handy. You know, when I heard about this idea, I hope it's an admiral, too. When I heard about this idea of putting a television set in a dentist's office, I wonder if he shows only the very old movies, like they have the very old magazines. I heard the other day of a father Indian and a son Indian who were coming out from seeing one of the Western old movies, and the little boy said to his daddy, he says, "Daddy, do we always lose all the fights?" I don't know, the doctor didn't tell me, but I often wonder if instead of giving Novocaine, he doesn't put on television Life is Worth Living. I understand also that his favorite movie is, that he puts on the show, is The Greatest Yank of Them All. And whenever he asks a patient, "Do you want the tooth pulled this week or will you come back next week?" he always puts on the $64,000 question. My angel went to see him last week, watched him polishing teeth, and you know, since then he's been done a wonderful job since my blackboard. Well, our subject for this telecast is Russia's unknown weapons. Our world generally judges events, as you know, in terms of economics or politics. It's Russia, generally, that judges world events in terms of economics. The communists have what is known as the economic interpretation of history. That is to say, religion, art, morality. Everything is conditioned upon a method of production, so that all events are judged economically. In our Western world, we judge everything politically. So our press is concerned whether one is rightist or leftist. Now, you cannot be right or left without a center. So the center generally is Moscow. So if you move away from that center, you're called a rightist. If you move close to it, you're called a leftist. Well, these two ways of looking at world events make Russia and the United States just two great dinosaurs. You remember these prehistoric animals? One of them has been reconstructed in a specimen 65 feet long. Weighs 35 tons. Great, tremendous bodies and tiny, tiny little heads. And we use the dinosaurs as a symbol of both in order to indicate that they've got great material power. They're talking of intercontinental missiles, atomic bombs, economic production, and so forth. But the non-political, the non-economic thought, in other words, the spiritual, moral worth of the world, that is given as little consideration as the heads of the dinosaurs. Isn't there another way of looking at events besides politics and economics? Russia has looked at events another way. So let us go back into the history of Russia. First of all, ask ourselves, what did the great writers, literateurs, philosophers of Russia during the 19th century say would be the secret power of Russia? Secondly, has communism fulfilled that power? And thirdly, why not? Now for the history of the Russian writers. This is just a little introduction to them because there were two classes of writers in the end of the 18th and 19th century. There was one group of Russian writers that called themselves the Westerners. And this particular group of writers were very much in favor of Russia tying itself up with Europe. For example, Turgenev was one of the greatest exponents of that idea. And Turgenev argued that Russia is never going to make any progress without some kind of industrial civilization. Then on the other hand, there were another group of writers called the Slavophiles. Slavophiles like Dostoevsky, Herzen, and others, who said that Europe was doomed. The bell has not yet been tolled. But Russia will perish if it ever unites with Europe. One of them, Smiakov, went so far as to say that Russia will become very wicked, and it will give the fatal blow to Europe that will one day kill it. Now, these writers, as you see, had different points of view as regards Europe, but they had one thing in common. They both said, Russia has an unknown weapon, a great power, and that power, in their own language, they called Strost. Strost in Russia, in Russian, means suffering. And they said that Russia would one day be great, would have a mission toward the entire world, simply because it understood resignation and suffering and was closely allied in some way with the very passion of Christ. They pointed out, for example, that the word for peasant in Russia, krestanin, has the same connotation and almost the same sound as Christian. Then they indicated, too, how many churches in the northern part of Russia were called the churches of the Transfiguration. You remember the Transfiguration of our blessed Lord, when his garments became white as snow, and his face did shine as the sun. And all the while, in that anticipated glory, he spoke to Moses and Elias of his death. Russia liked that idea. Russia liked the idea of all glory being conditioned by strost, by suffering. And so it was the common name of their churches, particularly in the north. Was brought out in one of the great books of Turgenev, The Living Relic, tells the story of Lucera, who was a village maiden, beautiful, lovely, sweet, admired by everyone. Poor Lucera falls downstairs. She's a cripple. She loses all her wealth and possessions. She's on a cot in a lonely hut, deserted. Someone calls on her and says, is there anything you want, Lucera? She said, want? I have just discovered that the Lord loves me because he made me suffer. The visitor said, but is there something we can do? Lucera said, yes. Just reduce the rent of the peasants. That 19th century story of Turgenev was a little cameo of Russia's hidden power. And one of the early 19th century poets, Nekrasov, wrote, speaking of that spirit of Russia, only a crown of thorns, O Russia, suits thy sullen beauty. Sullen beauty. Now, this spirit of Strost, we cannot understand in our Western world. We are built upon another principle here. I mean, our secular civilization is built upon the principle of progress and security. We believe that thanks to evolution, biological, industrial evolution, we are destined to become greater and greater and more powerful until, as well as well said, but he's passé, that we would all become kind of gods. The Russians have not thought that way. They believed, I mean these writers and these philosophers, all believed that someday Russia would be great. As Kamiakov wrote, he said, we have a mission to the entire world. And that mission is conditioned upon the fact that we first have to suffer, and we first have to suffer from ourselves. Now we come to the communists. What have the communists done? Communists came into a land that understood Strost, that loved it, that was unlike other peoples of the world. And communism spoke to the Russian people in a language that the Russian people could understand. The communists said, there's going to be a little trial, there's going to be difficulty, there's going to be suffering, there's going to be dispossession. We're going to dispossess some of the great farmers. We're going to take away some of the wealth. But all of this is dross. And finally, after this dross, you will have your transfiguration. You will have your glory. The Russians knew what they were talking about. But of course, Russia, what did it do? It secularized that spirit. Communism fooled the Russian people. The kind of glory they were expecting was the glory of which their poets and their own religious prophets were talking. Not this kind of glory, not the infamous glory that would come from communism. And so it was the shadow of the cross that fell across Russia. And although communism was repudiating Christianity, it was using the language of the cross when it spoke of Strasse and the sufferings that they would have to endure before they would enter into the glory of communism. I said they secularized that spirit. And so they did. And see how they've secularized. First in athletics and secondly in education. Athletics in Russia is not the same as athletics here in America or in the west of the rest of the Western world. We are professionals, yes, but they still love to play. We have amateurs who just play for the love of the game. In Russia, everyone is a professional. They do not belong to a club. There's only one employer in Russia. That is the state. And so Russia trains, disciplines her youth, its youth, in preparation for athletic contests. Remember how successful they were in the Winter Games? They work harder. They train harder than the athletes of the Western world. Strasse. Been materialized, and it will work out. And watch it. Watch it in the next Olympic Games. Education. Again, Strasse. But secularized. They work harder. They study harder. They go to school 10 months a year. They go to school 6 days a week, not five. They do not have 4 and 5 hours of schooling. They have 8 hours of schooling a day. There are no electives. They've combined our 8 years of elementary, 4 years of high school into 10 years. 70% of all of the people of Russia today under 40 years of age have had a high school education. By 1960, Russia expects 100%. We're past the high school age to have had a high school education. The Russian youth, trained in the spirit of self-discipline and asceticism for the sake of the inglorious cause of communism, will buy books on nuclear physics at newsstands instead of romances and novels and comic books. It's a very serious business with them. They know the only way that they can ever get ahead is by study. And the concentration of the Russian youth in school is something that is positively marvelous. How do you think that we will be able to compete with this spirit? Here's something that is strong and arduous. Not that we should adopt their philosophy, but rather that we must remember that power always belongs individually and nationally to the people who are self-disciplined, who are easy on their neighbors. They are not easy on their neighbors. They are hard on themselves. And they've taken this great spirit, this hidden power of the Russian people, that absorbed the thoughts and the writings and the pens and the mouths of their great writers of the 19th century. And they have prostituted it, yes. But it was right. The original spirit. Will it win? Did these Russian writers ever intend that it would be communism that would develop the Strauss? In other words, have the Soviets fulfilled the deepest aspirations of the Russian people? No. No, they have not. Now we come to one remark about these writers and philosophers that we have not yet mentioned. They all agree that before Russia would enter into its glory, it would one day, as Solovey said, be possessed by a devil. Before Russia would enter into its heritage, it would become wicked, diabolical, and wreak ruin to the world. And they knew it. So Dostoevsky compared Russia to the young man in the land of the Gerasenes. You remember, the young man was possessed with the devil. Our blessed Lord drove the devil out of the young man into the swine. The swine plunged into the sea. And Dostoevsky, who lived in the last century, almost 100 years ago, wrote this book, around 1870, Brothers Karamazov, in which he spoke of how evil Russia would be. You would almost think that the Dostoevsky was writing in our day, lived under communism instead of a century ago. Looking back on this youth, he said, yes, he said, that's my Russia. That's my beloved land. Oh, the once holy Russia. Now it has become corrupt and full of sores and full of devils. But one day, the devil will be driven out of Russia. And the devil will be pushed back and back and back into the sea. And there he will be drowned. And Russia will sit at the feet of Christ and learn his gospel. Alexander Ersin, writing in 1870, said, Russia, your garden must first be watered with blood and tears of your own. They all saw this evil. And not only those writers of the 19th century, but now let me quote for you two Russian poets who have lived under communism. First of all, Voloshin. And secondly, Alexander Blok. Voloshin died in 1933. Wrote a magnificent poem called Transubstantiation, in which he said that Russia would have to fall to the ground. He saw it falling to the ground. Communism, he lived under it. And then the wheat would die and then would spring forth into new life. Russia would eventually come into its heritage. And then he wrote another poem called Holy Russia. Very remarkable poem in which he said that Russia was very much like a princess that had nobility of character, deep sense of self-sacrifice, love of mankind. And then Voloshin said the princess became completely dispossessed, robbed, beaten, and tortured by her own people. And Voloshin, in his poem, then asks, did she hate Russia? In other words, the Soviets? Did she hate? No. Russia said, I will become, though I am the most abject of slaves, I will prostrate myself into the mire, and I will kiss the earth of Russia. Thou fool, in Christ, I love you. princes would recover the Strauss. And then there came that great, mysterious poet Alexander Bloch, died in 1918 after having lived 2 years under communism. He wrote this great poem called The Twelve. He chose the title 12 because it was a mystical number. It symbolized the 12 that our divine Savior sent out on a mission to the world. He said he chose it because communism perverted that mission and claimed that it had a mission to go out into the entire world and by revolution, by fear, by tyranny, to bring the whole world into subjection to itself. And he describes this godless army marching in the snow. The fire is shot in the air in mockery of Holy Russia. They see something before them as they march, but they cannot clearly make it out. There's a bourgeois girl there whom one of the Soviet soldiers makes love. She spurns him, and they shoot her. And then they go on, as Alexander Bloch says, shouting and shrieking, hurrah for freedom, hey, hey, freedom without a cross. In other words, freedom without a cross. And then Alexander Bloch ends up his poem by saying, and so they march with sovereign tread. Behind them, a hungry cur. And at the front, a blood-stained banner. Invisible in the raging snow, unwounded by the bullet's flight, at their head goes Jesus Christ. That from Bloch. America, learn a lesson. As for Russia itself, let Russia know that someday it will have this frost and it will not be under communism. And then someday there will be fulfilled the words of one of its poets, Andrei Bely, who said it will have a mission to the world. Russia, thou art a bride. Receive thou the message of the spring.